please stay with us as we speak to our next panel, our panel of Māori educational leaders, here talking to us about the impact of COVID-19, the highs and the lows, or what it exposed, the highlights and the lowlights of COVID-19 and other issues, from Comet Auckland, the Education Māori Manager, Dr. Will Flavel, the Chair of Te Aki Tia, the Māori Principals Association, Bruce Jepson, and our very good friend, former President of the New Zealand Principals Federation, Whetu Cormick. We'll be joined by the Co-Chair of Te Runanga Nui or Kura Kaupapa Māori, Rāwiri Wright, in just a moment. But firstly, want to welcome our manuhiri, tēnā koutou katoa, me tuku mihi kia koutou katoa. Thanks very much for joining us this afternoon. Wonderful to have you all here with us. Can I start with you, Dr. Flavel? COVID-19 exposed the best and the worst of education when it came to our tamariki, our tauira Māori. The worst, I guess, was it highlighted the inequities, particularly around resources for our tauira and for some of our kura, particularly our kura in lower decile, well, in lower income areas. The highlight, though, I guess, is the resilience shown by our tauira, their whānau, and kaiako in the school communities themselves. Would it be fair to say that actually the inequities that were highlighted is actually to our advantage because we can actually deal with this now?
Yeah, tēnā koe kore, tēnā koro, ngā mihi nui o te wā ki a koutou katoa. Yeah, kore, absolutely. So, talking to many principals and teaching staff, we recognise that a lot of the schools, and here I live in West Auckland, but also South Auckland, that once the pandemic hit, you know, they weren't able to cope. I mean, you heard stories of one cell phone that was the only digital device in one particular family and family in South Auckland. So this has been a two-year experience for so many whānau. And so I think that perhaps for next year, hopefully we are prepared enough to actually resource what needs to happen in order to further support our tamariki, because it has been a really difficult time for them.
The inequities were highlighted in 2020, Bruce. Did they improve for our tauira and our kura in 2021?
Kia ora tātou, kia ora kurua. I guess we're learning as we go, aren't we? So as we move through and understand how we can better respond to COVID-19, there has been some improvement in the way that we're able to deliver education, and also our children are more aware and they're growing their understanding as they move through it as well. So you mentioned earlier, the resilience that children are showing, and what we're seeing now is their ability to adapt to those conditions that are variable, and we're seeing things like innovation come through. But at the end of the day, what's most important for the tamariki is that they keep their connection to their whānau and to their kura, so they can establish that strong relationship and maintain it however we best can under the circumstances.
So what did the Ministry of Education learn about these inequities and how to address them then, Whetu?
I don't know if they learned anything. E kare, tēnā koe e kare, tēnā koe mo te tono, i tēnei ahiahi, tēnā kōrua. I don't think I learned anything. If you listen to business on the radio, on the television, who's doing all the moaning? All the rich people are doing the moaning. Our whānau haven't been given a voice in this kōrero, in this conversation. I think we can do it a lot better, and I don't mean to poo-poo our other commentators, our other panellists here. We have learnt stuff, but I think we need to learn a little bit more. We need to act at a greater pace. Only those with the strong voices are the ones who are having the voice and are being listened to. So the rich are moaning because of their pockets and their wallets are now empty. The poor and our whānau are not moaning, are they? They haven't been given a voice. So I think we can do a little bit better.
What is that better then, Dr. Flavel? What is that better then?
Well, you know, it's about ensuring that their essential basic needs are met. So, for example, you know, the housing crisis here in Claudette. You know, we don't have enough homes for our whānau here in West Auckland. I mean, rents are going up. There's very limited accommodation. So not only whānau are struggling with the educational aspects of their tamariki, but actually basic daily living. And you're right, Whetū. I think our whānau do need to stand up more and actually tell our government and local government that actually more action in terms of supporting their, you know, basic and essential needs.
I did read, and I'm going to get the figures wrong, but it was in the billions. That's the amount of money that actually tamariki collectively lost in actual revenue in Pūtea by them being disconnected from learning. So they calculated this on their what they lost in terms of the teachers front-facing them. So it was lost wages, it was lost resources, it was lost, it was even kai, it was transport. So the tamariki actually lost billions of dollars in revenue, and that means then that it would impact on their learning, earning potential once they came of age. Is there anything that we can take from those statistics in terms of Māori? Because we don't tend to think of the financial impact for our tamariki, Whetū.
Well, I think some of the things that have become apparent as a result of COVID-19 is that, you know, our government is fixated on the issue of equity and enabling Māori to be involved in business, to be involved in education. And I know that our government is really trying to address those inequities. I do some other work outside of education, and it is quite clear that government bureaucracies want to encourage Māori to be stepping into the sort of wider business network and so forth. So, you know, that whilst I might be sound quite negative at the outset, I think there are some positives that are coming from it. I think, you know, in terms of this voice that we talk about, I think it's actually the professionals, us, iwi, the iwi leaders need to be having a stronger voice and stating that there are problems right across the board. Let's forget about health and business and so forth. Let's think specifically about education. I don't know how we can get whānau voice even stronger, but you know, the three of us who are sitting here, Rawiri, he's going to be joining us soon. He's got a very, very strong waha, and he carries with him the thinking of those in Kura Kaupapa. I think it's our responsibility as education leaders to be challenging the Ministry of Education, to be challenging the Minister and the Associate Ministers. They are the people who, I guess, pull the strings. So, you know, there are some learnings there for all of us.
Well, what of the attainment levels then? What of the children's potential loss of learning potential then? Obviously, it's huge, Bruce. Can we quantify the amount of loss of learning that our tamariki have had?
Oh, well, we can. It's a bit early to be able to quantify it yet until the results come out. But once we do have that data, we'll be able to ascertain exactly what sort of impact it's had, whether negative or positive. I guess the opportunity will lie in, we're speaking about the revenue that may have been lost. I'm interested in how that revenue could be reinvested into education, given what's happened has happened. So we can learn from what's happened and then reinvest that money into Māori education. So what the data could tell us is where the gaps are, and if there has been a negative impact, then how we can reinvest that funding in such a way that it will make a difference to our profession. But I guess on the whole, whilst you're mentioning the impact that it's had on teaching and learning, the most important thing at the end of the day is that we have our hauora intact. And I think there's a combination, a partnership between hauora and effective learning. So from the outset, we've had to be at distance for in tamariki, for example, but across the country, it's been wide and varied. I believe that we need to, the money shouldn't just go into a washing machine and get washed and spun out in a different way. The money should be reinvested into education in the areas that are most needed. We should take the learning. I did like the response in terms of teachers and professionals being able to make overall judgments on Tauira in their achievement rather than letting them have to go and sit exams. That wasn't going to be beneficial for those people that have been a distance for such a long period of time. Whereas for those people that maybe exams were going to be more beneficial, they had that opportunity. So at the end of the day, I think it's a bit early to try and ascertain what sort of damage has been done, but it is clear that this has had a negative impact on tamariki Māori, on the profession, and on kaimahi Māori, including tumuaki and kaiako.
Chloe, can I just jump in there? Yes, of course. 2 weeks ago about the ERO report, and I was interested in what teachers and tumuaki were saying. Clearly, there were a lot of stressed out teachers and a lot of stressed out tumuaki. And, you know, having been a principal for many years, I know the challenges of what leadership is, what leadership challenges there are. And obviously with COVID, they would have been even more highlighted. What I was really interested in knowing, observing through that report was that there was very little information given about what whānau Māori and whānau tamariki Māori were thinking. It was focused on the wider group, obviously, Pākehā. And I think that the Education Review Office, and they know that our focus is around Māori achievement, they could have done it a little bit better in that regard. And maybe people like you, Bruce, can actually challenge Nick Pohl around this to ensure that we do get some data on for our Māori tamariki. This notion that you talk about, Bruce, about getting teachers to make those overall teacher judgments and not have students having to sit the test, I applaud that. It's been known within kura kaupapa Māori, the notion of tairongo, where teachers can use their senses, what do I see, feel, hear, touch, etc., to make those overall teacher judgments. And it is timely that perhaps the way that we do it in kaupapa Māori settings can be applied also to mainstream settings. So there's a positive that may have come out of it.
Can I just come to you, Dr. Flavel, in Tamaki Makaurau, in South Auckland, in Tamaki Kite Tonga, 500 kids were lost to secondary school last year in 2020 alone, and it seems as though this will double. In fact, Mahia Nathan talks about it quite often with us, the number of kura kids that have not returned. They've picked up most of them, the majority of them. We know where they are. They've picked up little sidebar jobs to help with whānau income. What of them then? What responsibility does the government have to re-engage these tauira back into education?
Yeah, I mean, the government has to make that a priority, because you have kids, you know, choosing whether or not they want to go back to school or not, whether to be, you know, unfortunately some of them are disengaged within the school system. So why would you go back to that particular system to sit in the classroom for an hour and not sort of develop any further, or actually being able to not only earn money, but actually use that money to support whānau? And, you know, students from high decile schools don't necessarily have to cope with those particular issues. And so, you know, just with the NCEA, there were pleas from South Auckland secondary school principals who didn't want their students to be able to sit the external exams, because they added another pressure. So if we look at the mental health of many of our rangatahi, that was quite paramount over the last 2 years too.
And in fact, in South Auckland, just as we speak, the principals are meeting with the MOE as we speak, which is why they weren't able to join us this afternoon. But the other issue, though, I guess, is it is about economics. It's about poverty. Our kids cannot. They feel a sense of unease about returning to school, because they have become one of the major breadwinners in their whānau, albeit that they are on minimum wage. And so how is it that, you talked about housing earlier, how is it then that we can get these kids back on track? What does the Ministry of Education need to do, Fetu? I mean, these whānau are having to send their kids out to work. I mean, this is third world stuff.
Dr. Anne Mill talked about this publicly recently, that, you know, this was an opportunity for us as educators and educators Māori to reimagine the way that we deliver education. You're right, Will. Kids are currently in a system, or pre-COVID were in a system, and they still are, where the needs of Māori are, okay, the ministry says we need to focus on it, but actually right across the board, across all of our schools, we've still got a long way to go to ensure that the needs of Māori are at the fore, right, as a priority. This is an opportunity, I think, to reimagine how we deliver education. Why would kids want to go back to a school where really they weren't achieving, whereas they can be doing this at home? So I think we need to think carefully about how we do this. I don't have all the answers, but there needs to be almost a summit brought together of Māori leaders, educational leaders, and others to discuss this. And not to, you know, and I think the ministry have an awesome person at the helm at the moment, Iona Holstein. Without her, we wouldn't be having these types of conversations. And Bruce will know clearly what I'm talking about. She has really supported kaupapa Māori and Māori-focused leadership across the board. And I just think this is an opportunity with her at the helm and with strong leaders like Bruce and others who are sitting right across education, and not, you know, not obviously not just teachers and principals, but others like yourself, Will, to come together and to discuss this. What can we do going forward into the future? I suspect that this pandemic and the issues that are falling out are going to be with us for the next 5 years. We're not going to be returning to school in the next 2 years as we did 2 years ago. So here, let's do it.
So that means innovation of the way in which we deliver our learning to the kids, doesn't it, Bruce? Which means also, too, that it's got to be online. And for a lot of our tamariki, we didn't have the technology to go online anyway. So, I mean, there's that hassle. But also, too, I guess it will allow some of our kaiako who do not wish to take part in the mandatory vaccination to actually become part of a process of learning from a distance or distance learning. Is that something that the Te Akitea might embrace, Bruce?
Oh, kia ora. Can you hear me? Okay, I sort of lost a bit of contact there, but I'll endeavour to give some sort of response, hopefully related. Though I think what we know, as has been mentioned through this kōrero so far, is that Māori are just we're marginalised in every way, shape, and form within the system. And I think as we're talking through this, if we've got and you're talking about vaccinations in particular, well, we're talking about whānau that aren't for whatever reason. Not taking that step to become vaccinated, and they have their own reasons for that. And in a way, that just reinforces the point that I'm making. Our whānau are not within the system, and they don't trust the system, and for a variety of reasons, we're not engaging in that system. I've just come out of lockdown, actually, with my kura, and one thing that I haven't had the opportunity to share is that the most marginalised people in that experience with my Māori community, are representative of about 38% of the school. We have about 730 tauira. We used to be a low decile school, but now we're still somewhere in the middle to high area. However, at the end of the period of having six infections at school, about 13% of my community remained untested. The vast majority of those whānau were Māori. So it's across all levels our people are marginalised, and it's not only low decile whānau that are affected. Our whānau are affected, and there's a lot of work to be done to build up that trust. I really like the idea that Whetū put forward about organisations such as Te Akitea and other kindred organisations such as Tohu Matua, Kura Kaupapa, Kura A Iwi coming together. And I like the idea of those, the kindred organisations coming together with Tamariki Māori at the heart of the matter and having a discussion about forming what was coined by Mason Jury as a Māori education authority. Now, for some, that may say sound really out there, but actually that's the way that we're going to forge our people back into the system, by Māori, for Māori.
And if they can do it in health, whānau, they can do it here. I think Absolutely. We've got a thing going here. Claudette, you could be our chair.
Well, I'll bring the chairs in. Yeah, absolutely, I'll bring the chairs in. But can I just ask this, Will? The kids are able to, under 12-year-olds, 5 to 12, 11, are now able to be vaccinated, and they'll be done in January. It's critical that the kura play a big role in that, because obviously that's where the kids are, that's where we're going to capture them. Is that going to be too onerous? I mean, I know Whetū and Bruce can talk about it as well too, but from your perspective in terms of the whānau, would it be better for your whānau out west if they went to the kura and had their babies done?
Yeah, I mean, there were even calls for, you know, there were kids out here that wanted vaccination events at their school, and they were initially denied by the, you know, DHBs in the start, which is a great shame. But clearly, I think the concern that I have is that a lot of whānau are still hesitant to have their tamariki vaccinated. So I've seen a couple of informal surveys online about that. And so, again, it's about sort of educating the reasons why our tamariki need to be vaccinated, but there are still hesitant attitudes out there still.
And that goes, to Bruce's point, doesn't it, about the hesitancy and the a percentage of our whānau that weren't vaccinated in his rohe, doesn't it, Whetu?
Yeah, however, can I just make a comment that we are a highly vaccinated nation. If you look at all the vaccinations that go on in schools, MMR, if you look at HPV, roughly around 90 to 93% of our tamariki are vaccinated. So what we're seeing now with the with COVID-19, with the current vaccination, is we're sitting at 90%. If we were to introduce this into our schools, we'd get a similar uptake rate as well, which is really healthy. So I think somebody said to me the other day, how is this going to be done? No doubt it'll be managed in schools. Is that what you're hearing, Bruce?
Well, I can speak from experience. We had testing stations at school, and as a result of not the best results initially, but then following that with a bit of education, as Will has expressed, bit of education, support around the whānau. Some of that will be gained through engaging with kura and the trust that already exists there. But also, I think there's an opportunity to engage tangata whenua, mana whenua, in that space through kura. And much along the lines of this Māori Education Authority, I believe that there's a place that iwi should, as a right through te tiriti, and not only as a right, but also as a share in power, as a share in partnership and relationship, kura should have an active role. Iwi should have an active role. And what I'm meaning by that is using constructs such as kahui ako to share the leadership with iwi, and then the response would always have tangata whenua embedded. Sounds out there, but it actually isn't. I'm actually in a rohe that's already doing that, piloting that model, whereby mana whenua by right have 50% of the power share within kura across 9 of the largest kura in Aotearoa and the fastest growing rohe in Aotearoa.
I see that,
so we'll
that
see
would,
how we go.
Yeah, I see that would work. Arohe, but with differences, contextual differences. I'm not 100% sure how that might pan out as an example in Auckland, South Auckland, West Auckland, Central Auckland, but absolutely understand what you're saying and then reconstruct it to suit the context and the environment in which it's placed. But definitely I think what you're saying is Māori is the critical centre of this process. Well, I just want to ask, and it goes back to a question that I brought up earlier on about mandatory vaccination for our kaiako. So I see online that there were 5 staff members from one of the high schools out here in South Auckland, because they weren't vaccinated, they had their end of year staff party by themselves. They raise the issue around what do we do with valuable kaiako, and it's a pity that Rāwhiti hasn't joined us because they had a process in place for kura kaupapa to still engage with those kaiako that are hesitant. But what do we do going forward, considering that we're bleeding staff out of schools and we can't get enough kaiako coming in, and particularly reo kaiako? What do we do about those who are hesitant, but it's still nonetheless very valuable?
So first of all, it's a privilege to work with our tamariki and their whānau. It's not a right, it's a privilege. And if you can't meet those health and safety needs, then you shouldn't really be in the classroom. In terms of the upcoming future teachers, so I've done guest lectures with over 250 student teachers at Auckland University. I worked alongside 60 Teach First teachers coming up. So I think in terms of the number of teachers coming through, I think there'll be plenty enough to no doubt hopefully fill many of those spots. A lot of our kaiako who perhaps want to go overseas for those particular overseas experiences aren't going overseas. So, you know, I think it's very minimal the number of teachers who are non-hesitant. But again, I really want to emphasise that it's an absolute privilege to work with our tamariki. That should be the main focus.
Do we have enough kaiako coming through, Whetū? I see reports that we haven't got enough, particularly in our kura Māori and particularly in our bilingual units in kura Auraki. I know that when I went to Takiura, as an example, as a first year, I watched the third years being, enticed or being, sought after by government departments. They were coming into the kura, into the wānanga, and having hui wānanga with our third years, because, the third years, once they get to that, they're just magnificent. And they were being enticed away and away from the classrooms and into those government departments. So I'm just thinking that, no, actually, we don't have enough kaiako Māori.
We don't have enough kaiako across the board. There was a workforce strategy that was put in place a couple of years ago, pre-COVID. I'm not sure if that's flowing yet, Bruce, but we do still need kaiako across the board. And if you're talking about kura Māori, kura kaupapa Māori, the shortages are even greater. And we also know that beginning teachers typically stay in the system for 3 to 5 years. If you're a fluent te reo Māori speaker, you get picked up by those corporates or those bureaucracies and off you go to work somewhere else. So the government needs to be focused on this area. It needs to keep their eye on the ball. But in saying that, with the pandemic, we've had most of our tamariki, you fellas up there in tamariki, for 4 months working from home. The shortages and the shortage issue would have been able to be covered a little, but across the country, we still have shortages. So I think that soon they'll be opening up the borders for those essential workers and teachers from overseas. I'll be coming over here because Aotearoa apparently is the place to be.
So what is Te Aki Tia doing about the shortage of kaiako Māori? I mean, this is up to you lot, is it not, Bruce?